talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning and welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks show. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And today is September 21st, 2015. Let's talk about the weekend box office. I'm going to guess. I bet Johnny Depp whacked the competition this weekend. Michelle, am I right?
Almost. Not quite. Yeah, actually, yeah. The number one movie at this weekend's box office was Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials. Opening at 3,791 theaters, the movie took in $30 million at the box office. Number two was Johnny Depp's Black Mask.
Okay.
Yeah, the mob can't hold a candle to those YA gangs. Those young adult novel gangs.
Yeah, it was the second in the trilogy for Maze Runner. So
it had a built-in audience.
Exactly.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But Black Mask opened at a respectable 3,188 theaters, so it took in $23 million. And that was a Warner Brothers picture. Universal Pictures, The Visit from M. Night Shyamalan, took in another $11 million, putting its U.S. domestic gross at $42
million. Mm-hmm. Now, we reviewed The Visit last week. Lynn Venhouse sat in for Michelle because you were in Boise.
That's right.
Boise.
It was beautiful.
You're a big M. Night fan, as we discussed 2 weeks ago, you finally caught up with The Visit. What did you think of The Visit?
I liked it. I loved all the twists, so I'm cheering.
What a shock!
I mean,
Michelle
liked it! Exactly. And you know what? For a movie that costs only $5 million to make, oh my gosh, you know, coming, it's domestic gross, $42 million.
Yeah.
So you know Universal and M. Night are celebrating.
Yes, but wouldn't it have been sad if it had lost money after all costing only $5 million to make?
Yeah, no. The word on it was pretty good. So that's why Universal said, yeah, we'll help you distribute it, but you got to pony up, Minoge, $5
million. Yeah.
At number four was The Perfect Guy, still doing really well at the box office for a movie that only cost $12 million to make.
Mm-hmm.
Took in another $9.6 million this weekend. Its cumulative gross now stands at $41 million. Film played at 2,230 theaters.
Yeah, yeah. I still haven't seen that yet. I don't know if anybody that's seen that.
Nobody from our site has seen it. I mean, it's marketed in a black audience. They're obviously coming out in big numbers, which is great.
Number five was Everest, but that was only in a limited IMAX release at 545 theaters.
And it still came in number five.
Came in number five, 7.6 million IMAX. That was a huge release for IMAX.
So I assume that'll open wider, this weekend?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Jim and I saw that in IMAX 3D.
Oh, the only way to see it.
Yeah, we'll be reviewing that here in a few minutes.
Great. Right. Number six was still in the top 10, War Room. That's just unbelievable. It took in $6.2 million. Gross now stands at $49 million.
Something like that?
And another film that's a predominantly African-American cast. So number seven was A Walk in the Woods. That has a gross of $25 million now, played at 2,000 theaters, and took in $2.7 million.
That's pretty strong for an older adult film to still be in the top 10 after 3 weeks.
I think word of mouth is probably pretty strong on that.
Good release.
Older audiences.
Yeah, good time to release, pre-fall type movie.
It's a good movie, too.
Number eight was Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, played at 2,202 theaters. Mm-hmm. And they had Paramount had a special going on this weekend. It was buy one, get one free.
Was it BOGO or whatever they call it? BOGO.
Exactly. Took in $2.2 million. It now stands at $192 million in the U.S. alone.
Mm.
Number nine was our favorite, Straight Outta Compton, playing still at 1,900 theaters, took in $2 million, gross of $159 million across the U.S.
Mm.
Number 10 was Grandma, that stars Lily Tomlin, that you and I really like, Jim.
Yeah, I saw that it's expanded to about six more theaters here in town, or maybe five theaters. Yeah.
So now it's playing nationwide. It's playing at a little over 1,000 theaters. Took in $1.5 million, has a gross of $3.7 million now. Number 11 was Captive from Paramount that Tom reviewed.
Mm-hmm. Very surprising.
Interview.
Yeah, that it didn't crack the top 10.
Well, I said in my review, I didn't like the film. I gave it 1.5 out of 5 stars. But I think if they'd have played up the Christian angle, I think it may have done better. It's based on a book called Unlikely Angel, mm-hmm. which I think is probably a more Christian title. It's about this fellow who kills 4 people and holds up in this woman's apartment and keeps her hostage for 8 hours, and she reads to him from The Purpose-Driven Life, which is a very famous Christian book.
Yeah, Rick Warren, right?
Yeah, exactly. Why didn't they call it Unlikely Angel? I think that would have been a bit more Christian title. Captive is so bland. I mean, mm-hmm. it was hostage taken.
Maybe they just kind of chickened out on that. Yeah. Maybe they decided to go for the thriller crowd instead of the evangelical crowd.
It was a big mistake. The poster shows David Oyelowo running around with a gun like it's some sort of action film. I think they made some poor choices in the marketing of that film, especially with the way some of these Christian films have been performing. I think they missed an opportunity.
Yeah, and this weekend it only opened in 806 theaters.
I doubt it's going to open any wider.
Yeah, 1.4 million. Yeah. And it also co-starred
Kate Mara,
who was in
Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And she's also in The Martian coming up.
But I did interview the star of Captive, David Oyelowo, and you can read my interview with David Oyelowo over at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Reading my interview with that actor is much more entertaining than sitting through
Captive. It's a really thorough, really in-depth interview. I really like the interview.
And you did the research, and it is that director of old Andy Griffith episodes. Yeah. That's very odd.
Yeah, Jerry Jameson, 81 years old. Why they tapped him to direct this film, I have no idea. But it's not his fault.
And an interesting release from Paramount Pictures.
Mm-hmm. It is from Paramount, huh? Wow. I thought maybe it was a little indie company, but
this is a Paramount movie. Yeah. And at number 12 was No Escape from the Weinstein Company, playing at 2,000 theaters, so that took in about a million.
But what about We Are Your Friends?
Is it even in the top 30, I wonder?
But it'll be in many top 10 worst lists.
Oh, I thought you were going to say top 10 lists. I was like, Michelle.
No. Worst off.
I was going to say, you didn't see it, you're lucky.
Exactly.
It's pretty lousy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this weekend, I suspect The Intern and possibly Hotel Transylvania will both knock Maze Runner. One of those will probably knock Maze Runner off its first.
Well, the built-in family Hotel Transylvania.
That's my bet.
I think that'll do well.
I saw that on Saturday.
Yeah, I think Intern could do maybe number 3 or something like that.
Plus, you've got bigger release for Everest, and in some of the other bigger cities, you've got Stonewall and 99 Homes. So it'll be interesting to see how those do in limited release.
Yeah, we don't get 99 Homes for a couple of weeks. I saw Michael Shannon on the Today Show last week, and he had a clip from it, and it looks really good.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
So I'm looking forward to
Huge fan of Michael Shannon.
Yeah, good actor. All right, well, let's start reviewing some of these movies that we're talking about. All three of us saw Black Mass.
How come no one has nailed Whitey Bulger? He seems to be involved in every crime in the city, and yet the Bureau keeps saying he's clean.
Well, what's Bulger done?
What's he done? Everything.
Jim reviewed it at WeAreMovieGeeks.com last week, and what did you give it, 3.5?
Yeah, I ended up giving it 3.5. I was kind of torn between that and 4.
Yeah, I was too. Yeah. No, I thought, if I review this one, I give it 3.5 or 4. And that's
but, my buddy I took with me said, you're being too generous. Yeah, but I don't want to turn people away from this because the acting is so good in it.
It's a solid gangster movie. I think our expectations may have been a little too high.
Yeah, I think the problem is the pacing and them trying to put too much into it. And it just seems to be it stops and starts as then he did this and then he did that.
Yeah, it's episodic.
And it's a little deceptive in the advertising because it's truly the story of John Connolly, played by Joel Edgerton, and how he sort of because of blind ambition and wanting to rise to power in the FBI bureau, decides that if I can't take out both mobs, I'm going to take out one of them with the help of the other mob.
Yeah.
It's the old expression, sleeping with dogs, you'll get fleas.
Yeah, you're right, though. It really is his story, and it might have been more interesting if it had been told through his eyes and had Whitey Bulger a supporting character. And maybe Johnny Depp might have received an Oscar nom for supporting actor if he'd have in a smaller role. John Connolly is definitely has a more dramatic story arc and is more of a tragic character.
But Whitey Bulger is flashier. I mean, he's going out and he's actually committing hits and himself. He's not just ordering his guys to go out and hit guys. He likes to get his hands dirty.
Yeah.
I definitely see a Golden Globe nomination. We'll see what it does for lead. We'll see what it does with Golden Globes.
They love Johnny.
Exactly. Screen Actors Guild and an Oscar nom. We'll see. It'll be interesting. Yeah. It'll be interesting.
But there's nothing better than a good gangster movie. That's one of my very favorite genres. And in Black Mass may be the best gangster movie of the year. There's one coming out in a couple of weeks called Legend about the craze. Maybe that'll be better. I don't know.
Yeah. I love the casting of Benedict Cumberbatch, Dakota Johnson. I thought it was just real solid performances. Ensemble.
Who I singled out as one of Whitey's lieutenants is Rory Cochrane, who we've seen in a lot of indie films and actually did a stint on television. I think he was part of CSI Miami for a few years. Really strong supporting part in it. There's a real sadness about his character. Yeah. I don't want to reveal too much of the plot, but he is completely humiliated by Whitey Bulger at the in one sequence, and it's all you hear what's going on, and you can see through his eyes that he's at his lowest ebb that a human being can possibly be at, and it's a great performance.
I was really surprised by Dakota Johnson's. I think she just gave a really fantastic performance.
She did, but she sort of disappeared
in a supporting. I wish we had seen more of her. Yeah. And I also like the music from a composer who's all over. I mean, he's just all over the place this year. Junkie XL, Tom Holkenberg, who's going by Tom Holkenberg, who did Mad Max. I was really impressed with the score again.
Oh, and what about the period costumes and the cars and all that? And a couple of sequences kind of reminded me of Goodfellas. And Scorsese did a version of Whitey Bulger in Departed with Jack Nicholson's Patty Costello character. Yeah. But that's a reason that people might have a problem with this, because the shadow of those Scorsese films, especially Goodfellas, looms so heavily over this film.
And it seems to borrow a lot from Scorsese, and also The Godfather with some of the big operatic family dynamics. But I don't think a lot of that worked. I don't think the stuff with Benedict Cumberbatch really worked that well. I didn't think they went into that enough. The movie's it's very episodic. It's just a series of, they introduce a character. Whitey Bulger doesn't trust this character. That character gets whacked. So they introduce another character. And I thought Johnny Depp was a little one-note. He was very, very good. And I know he's supposed to be a sociopath or a psychopath. But, boy, he was evil from beginning to end. There's a scene where his son dies. That's not giving a whole lot away because it's kind of near the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
And he's instead of showing some humanity in that character in that scene, it just gives him an excuse to be cruel to his wife.
Well, he's insistent that she's not going to terminate him there. And he's just furious about that. I did enjoy his sort of King of the Neighborhood sequence where he sees a woman. I don't know if she's an old school teacher, just a woman from the neighborhood with her groceries. And he has to get out of his car and help her and talk to her and all that.
Yeah.
And you see, it's kind of, I was comparing it a little bit to Jimmy Cagney in both Public Enemy and White Heat.
Mm-hmm.
Public Enemy, he's got the very tender scenes with his mother and all that. And then he goes out and is a vicious killer. Yeah. Same with White Heat.
Respectful to his elders. But then again, I think the movie sort of borrowed from those films as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And he just all of a sudden flips out like, talking about Goodfellas again, like Joe Pesci's character. You never know what's going to set him off, and what he likes to do in this film quite a bit is we'll actually shake hands with somebody before whacking them. It's like, oh, so we're okay, boy? Oh, sure, man, we're okay. Boom! Sort of a sadistic, gleeful trick he likes to play on him.
Oh, it's a solid film. It really is a good film. Yeah. I think we were all just hoping it would have been a notch better.
I don't know if maybe a little tightening of the editing would have helped. Maybe a few more voiceovers that could kind of talk about the incidences without showing them, which may have made the story go a little faster. Corey Stoll's very good in it as the guy that finally brings him down. Also, I want to mention Peter Skarsgård.
Oh, he was wonderful as a cokehead.
Balloon head. Very funny. Very funny and very very nice almost a cameo. It was like two or three scenes.
Yeah,
pretty
much. He's doomed as soon as you see
him introduced. And I almost forgot Julianne Nicholson, I believe that's her name. It plays Marianne Connolly's wife, and she's got a terrific scene with Depp, and it's one of the ones that scenes that people will be kind of squirming in their seats watching.
Yeah, she's a good actress. I recognized her from August Osage County, which is a movie I wasn't crazy about, but I thought she was really good in that. And Benedict Cumberbatch was in that as well.
Yeah, he was like in love with her in that, I believe. believe. As
well,
I recall.
they thought they were cousins, yeah. And they were going to fall in love anyway. But I think the twist was they turned out to be brother and sister. So I've just spoiled that movie for anyone who hasn't seen.
Well, and I appreciate a lot of the below the line crew, which I'm always just cheerleader for. I mean, from the score to, and I actually really did like the editing. I liked the cinematography, the makeup, the art, you know, the costume design. So, you know, those people I think was really solid and really added to the movie.
Oh yeah, great Boston location.
So we recommend Black Mass. We just wish we could recommend it a bit more. A couple other big movies opened over the weekend. Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials, Michelle said was number one, but we have not seen that.
Yeah, no, yeah. We're not big into the dystopian future, yeah. Teens save everybody kind of stuff, you know?
Kate Marquis did review it for WeAreMovieGeeks.com, and what'd she give it, 3, 3.5, something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
So she liked it okay. I think it's got a built-in audience, and I'm sure the tweens loved it. But Jim and I did see Everest.
Human beings simply aren't built to function at the cruising altitude of a 747. Our bodies will be literally dying. Everest is another beast altogether.
We saw it at the IMAX 3D last week, which is a great place to see a movie like Everest.
Yeah.
I liked it quite a bit. Michael Hafner reviewed it for We Are Movie Geeks and gave it 3 out of 5. I would have given it more of a 4 out of 5. It's based on a true story of climbing to the top of Everest has become a bit commercialized, and there was this sort of cocky guy from New Zealand, I think his last name was Hall, who would take, for a price, you'd have to pay this guy quite a bit of money. I think one of the guys says, I paid you, what do you say?
What, $60,000?
$60,000 to get me to the top of this mountain.
Yeah.
And I don't think they said this in the movie, but I think you pay this guy and he kind of guarantees that you'll make it to the top of Mount Everest, which like 30% of the people that try lose their lives.
Yeah, so at one point they even trudge by a corpse frozen in the snow.
Yeah. But so it's based on this true story that happened, I think about 10 years ago, where this Hall fellow took a group up there and there was a storm.
Storm out of nowhere.
Yeah. And he lost about half a dozen of his clients. Yeah. Unfortunately, a great cast.
What an all-star cast.
Yeah, Josh Brolin, Jake Gyllenhaal.
John Hawks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. John Hawks.
And in the lead, I guess, Jason Clarke as Hall. Yeah. And his wife is Keira Knightley.
Yeah. Well, she has kind of a thankless role.
Yeah, she's on the phone a lot.
Yeah, she's in bed talking on the phone. I'm sure that was a real rough shoot for her.
Emily Watson. Elizabeth, I think her name is Elizabeth Debicki, who was we last saw in Man from U.N.C.L.E., who plays sort of the medic that is back at base camp.
Oh, okay.
And,
I didn't recognize
her. I was like, who's that redhead? She's pretty cute.
It's a pretty exciting film. I would have given it probably 4 out of 5. It's not perfect, but it is based on a true story, so they couldn't really change the story around too much. I mean, there's a real exciting scene where Josh Brolin's on this ladder.
Oh.
And a lesser movie might have had him fall off the ladder, but I guess they wanted to stick with the facts.
Yeah, I guess these companies set up these ladders, like the type of ladders that you would buy at Home Depot or something.
Aluminum ladder.
To spread across and connect and rope together across crevasses. And, you know, people have to walk on top of them and usually end up dangling from them. And, the scene with Brolin is a nail-biter, man, especially in the 3D IMAX. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
We recently attended a few weeks ago. We had some of our people out in LA attend the press junket with Jason Clarke, Jake Gyllenhaal, Josh Brolin, Emily Watson, and John Hawks. And every one of the and actresses were very gung-ho about the movie, and they were able to find a great balance between the physical and emotional demands of the story. And we have details from the press junket up on the site, how the interviews went. It's a good read.
Yeah, I think that the problem that a lot of folks are having with it, that I talked to after the screening, is the first maybe hour or something is prep for the big deal before they get them on the climb to the top of Everest. The commercial trainers and guides put everybody through the paces, make sure that they can do the trek. A lot of this stuff, it seemed to be going on for quite a long time.
There's a lot of technical jargon. Yeah. If you're not a mountain climber, you're not going to know exactly what they're talking about. Another problem I had with it, and this was just something that you have to deal with, but these guys are wearing coats and their heads are wrapped and they're wearing goggles and they're wearing hats, and I found it a little hard to say who was who. And
it
was kind of like color coding. Okay, Jake Gyllenhaal's wearing a red coat and a blue hat, so let's remember that's who
John
that is.
Hawks is in yellow.
He's got a gray hat, so I need to remember that so I can figure out exactly who these guys is. I guess a lesser film would have exposed their faces so you could see who these actors are, but that wouldn't have made any sense because it's 30 degrees below zero.
It little bit of foreshadowing too, because there's a whole sequence with Hall telling about what will happen, you know, once they get in that. And said a lot of people, you know, with the lack of oxygen, will drive them crazy and they'll strip down naked, and you keep
sure
waiting.
Enough,
you make the count out of when is somebody going to go nuts and start to take off their clothes and all that.
Yeah.
The other thing which Michael touched on in his review is, being a regular guy watching this, you go, are these people nuts?
Yeah.
Why are they doing that?
Paying,
and of course,
all that money.
Yeah, well, just to do this.
To do it, period.
And you go, you know, this is just too cold. And you know.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't understand that mindset either, but there's a lot of extreme sports like that, and a lot of people enjoy doing it and risking their lives. And
It's a good score from Dario Marianelli, Oscar-winning composer who had done Atonement and Box Trolls. Lots of percussion.
Yeah. So that opens wider this Friday. But if you get a chance to see it in IMAX, in 3D, that's the way to go.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So Jim and I both do recommend Everest. Not perfect, but it's a darn good action film. Very exciting, very suspenseful. Jim has seen Mississippi Grind.
How's everybody feeling tonight? It's okay by me. Let's play some cards, huh? Aces are good, right?
I'm usually good at reading people, right? But you're all over the map. I can't spot your toe.
Fold. I want to know why?
Yeah. I don't care about winning.
Jim, tell us about Mississippi Grind. What, is that a good film?
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed that. That's a nice low-budget indie. Kind of reminded me of California Split, which we'll be talking about a little bit later.
Yeah.
It's about two guys that are into the gambling. And they meet up at one of the small casinos. It's Ryan Reynolds and Ben Mikkelsen, or Mendelsohn, I think is his name. We've seen him in supporting roles in a couple of things, and he's been very good. And, excuse me, I'm running out of oxygen myself here. But
I have an oxygen tank right here under the table.
Oh, good. Ben's character is kind of a lovable loser. He owes a lot of money. He's lost his wife and kid to gambling. And he sees in Ryan Reynolds, the sort of swaggering, cocky character, a good luck charm. They decide they're going to sort of make their way down the Mississippi River and stop off and gamble on the way to a big event in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And it's nice they make a stop off in St. Louis here in one of the gambling boats.
Wait a minute, don't tell me. You see the arch.
Oh, yes, you see the arch. You also get to see Sienna Miller,
who
is a hostess with the mostess, I guess. She's an entertainer at one of the boats.
Oh, yeah, I wonder if she was in St. Louis.
I don't know. She looks very nice as a redhead.
Oh,
and she's in that. And they, Ben Mikkelsen's character hooks up with this, I think her name is Tipton, Ashley Tipton, I believe, who was in Crazy Stupid Love. You might remember her as the babysitter in that.
Yeah, I do remember.
And they end up making a side trip to Little Rock and meet up with one of the characters' ex-wives.
Now, what's the tone? Is this a comedy, a drama?
Both, actually. There's some very funny moments in it. And it's sort of a slice of life thing. Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see the gambling. Done. There's a great sequence with Alfre Woodard, I believe is her name, who we've seen as actress in a lot of different things, a lot of different television. But I won't reveal her character, but it's quite a surprise, and it's a very nice twist.
She was nominated for an Oscar for a movie called Cross Creek in the 80s.
Yeah, she was terrific in Star Trek First Contact, a sort of a love interest for Captain Picard.
Mm-hmm. What's the title come from? Mississippi Grind? Is that a game?
I guess that's the fact that they're traveling down the Mississippi, and I guess it can be kind of a grind when you're not winning. Mm-hmm. And there's elements of the original Gambler and its remake in that there's kind of a self-destructive quality to these guys in certain sequences. They make some choices that they know aren't going to turn out well, and it's like they're wanting to punish themselves for their gambling excesses.
The film is co-directed by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, who previously did 2010's It's a Funny Kind of Story. That what movie star?
Oh, yeah.
Zach Galifianakis.
This is a better film than that.
I think I gave that one star. I reviewed that.
They co-directed this movie.
So this one's better. Okay.
Yeah, and it's certainly better than Ryan Reynolds' last film, Selfless.
Yeah.
So that's for sure.
We hated Selfless. I reviewed that one as well.
Yeah, and actually, I can't remember her first name. Reichert is her last name. She plays Bobby Fischer's mother in.
Oh, okay, I liked her in Pawn Patrol, which we reviewed last week.
Okay.
Okay, so Jim recommends Mississippi Grind, and that opens, I think, October October 2nd, and so look for Jim's review at wearemoviegeeks.com. A bunch of movies open this week. I saw Hotel Transylvania 2. That could be number one. Opens this Friday. They've asked me not to opine on it. I don't know why, though, because I liked the first Hotel Transylvania quite a bit.
Sometimes that's never a good sign, though.
Well, like I said, I'm not sure why. If you like the first one, you're going to like this one. It's actually quite good.
Yeah, sometimes the studios get skittish for no reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ever since Johnny and Mavis had their little monster, I've been the happiest vampire in the world!
Are we sure he's a vampire?
Technically, you have until you're 5 to get your vampire fangs.
Oh, he'll get his fangs. He's just like me. Look at him!
Blah, blah, blah.
And it kind of reminded me of a movie I saw as a kid called Mad Monster Party.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Which was just full of, you know, Forry Ackerman-esque monster puns.
Oh, yeah.
And did just hilarious things with these classic Universal monster characters. And in Hotel Transylvania, there's so much going on in parts 1 and 2. Just sort of on the periphery, sort of in the background, all this stuff going on. You know, funny little gags featuring the monster's abilities.
And a comedy legend lends his voice to this.
That's right. Mel Brooks shows up as Dracula's, I think it's his grandfather, Grandpa Vlad.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And he's quite funny. He didn't show up until about 20 minutes before it ends, but... He's great. And the movie only runs about 80 minutes. I'll review it at length next week, but it's a lot of fun. It's all right. The Intern.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
When I'm 80.
And I love myself. The world is
again. Remember a few weeks ago we talked about the senior intern program?
Seniors in high school or college?
No. Seniors in life.
Hold on. What?
Michelle and I are seeing tonight. Are you seeing that tonight?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
You are.
I'm seeing that tonight, and I will be reviewing that this Thursday night. That stars
Oscar winners.
Oscar winner Anne Hathaway and double Oscar winner Robert De Niro, and he plays a 70-year-old widow who somehow takes a job at this corporation, and she is his boss. Or I guess he's an intern at this corporation.
Yeah,
I don't know a whole lot about the story. It's directed and written by Nancy Meyer.
Yeah, was her last film?
It's Complicated.
That was it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And What Women Want with Mel Gibson was hers.
Yeah, of course, Something's Gotta Give.
I think this is another good time to release this type of movie.
Sure.
End of September.
I think her film sort of appealed to women. And
they do well at the box office. So, you know, and Warner Brothers needs all the help they can get.
Yeah. And Renee Russo's in it.
Oh, yeah,
anytime, you know, she's on screen as a celebration. Yeah. I enjoy her.
You know, everybody loves De Niro. And it looks like sort of a sweet performance from De Niro, judging by the trailer. Maybe even sort of a sad character.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it'll have a happy ending. And I'm not most anticipated movie of the fall, but I'm... I'll see.
There are worse things to sit through.
Yeah. So we'll let you know next week. Tomorrow we're seeing Stonewall.
What are you looking at, faggot?
I don't want to see you anymore.
All right, it's a raid. Up against the wall.
This is what we're fighting.
That's about the 1969 Stonewall riots.
Yeah.
It's a coming-of-age type of movie. It's actually from sci-fi director...
Blockbuster Man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Roland Emmerich.
His last film was White House Down, wasn't it?
Which I loved.
Yeah, exactly.
It made my top 10 list 2 years ago.
Although the reviews out of the latest film festivals are kind of mixed.
Oh, is that right?
Well, it seems like kind of an Americanized version of Pride, the sort of indie British film from a couple of years ago, without the striking miners subplot.
Well, the Stonewall Uprising took place at a gay nightclub in New York in 1969, and it was a turning point for gay rights. So it's a pretty important story, and they've made, I think, at least two documentaries about Stonewall. They ran one at Q Fest here in St. Louis a year or two ago. It doesn't have a much of an all-star cast. Jeremy Irvine is the star. He was in War Horse, Steven Spielberg's great film.
That train thing there, where he was a World War II POW there.
That's right, with Colin Firth. The station master.
Yeah, train man. Something like that.
And he was also in The Woman in Black 2.
Yes.
Earlier this year.
Yeah, I recognize, was it John Rhys-Meyers?
Yeah,
he's also in it. Joey King's also in it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Joey King, yeah. Okay. From Interstellar,
Okay. This is Roland Emmerich's first R-rated movie since The Patriot in 2000.
Who's reviewing Stonewall? Are you reviewing Stonewall?
I think I am. Yeah, that opens this Friday, I guess. Probably in just a couple of theaters, maybe the Tivoli or something.
Yeah. Look for Jim's review. Another movie that opens Friday that I'm really looking forward to. I've been looking forward to this movie for like 2 years. Green Inferno.
You know what this is? You know what they're doing to us?
It'd be like Eli Roth's remake of Cannibal Holocaust, which is a pretty sick but very good, intense horror film from 1980. It's about these sort of tree hugger do-gooders who fly down to the rainforest somewhere in Brazil to chain themselves to trees or protest or something. They think they're social justice warriors or something, and the cannibals get them and torture them and eat them and do all kinds of nasty things to them. I've heard it's just disgusting.
It was supposed to open
like a year ago. In fact, Andy, our friend, saw it 2 years ago at Fantastic Fest. So it's been sitting in the can. I think there was some controversy. That may have been why they pushed it back an entire year.
Flirting with an NC-17 rating for it or something? Is that what the controversy was, maybe?
Possibly.
It's a hard R.
It's
opening Thursday night, actually, all over the place, like at 9 and 10 p.m. shows.
Oh, okay.
That'll be an interesting one to see what it does at the box office. I'm
going Friday night. You guys have to join me.
Tired of these PG-13 horror films, by golly.
Yeah, and then you're seeing something today called Coming Home. It's a Chinese film.
Yeah.
Is it a remake of the one with John Voight and Jane Fonda?
No, I don't think so. It's about a teacher having returned to her village, and Zhang Ji is in it or something.
Don't know much about it. And another one that I think Jim's seeing Thursday night is called Sleeping with Other People with Jason Sudeikis.
Jason Sudeikis, Alison Brie. I think Adam Scott is in it. Mm-hmm. He's the go-to guy. He has a very small role in Black Mass also.
Yeah, well, Jason Sudeikis is married to Olivia Wilde, so why would he be sleeping with other people?
We have the trailer up on the site. It looks funny.
Yeah, it looks like a raunchier Harry Met Sally type of thing. Yeah. You know, whether or not these two people could be buddies and, you know, without the attraction intruding in. I think Amanda Pete's in this also.
Oh,
she's quite lovely too.
Also next week getting a midweek release so they can kind of get a few days ahead of everybody is The Walk.
Yeah.
Which I'm really interested in
that
seeing.
Opens next Wednesday?
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, okay. Hopefully we're going to get to see it next Monday.
That's Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
And I hope we get to see it in 3D IMAX.
And we're giving away passes right now, actually, to the screening. So that is one of our contests.
Next Monday we're seeing that?
Hopefully.
I'm going to the Taylor Swift concert next Monday.
Oh.
So The Walk for me. There's always a lot of stuff going on in St. Louis on the movie scene, and this week is no exception. The second annual Sham Film Festival will be presented at the Winifred Moore Auditorium at Webster University this weekend. This is a mockumentary and fake movie festival?
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Well, at least in the description of the films, it sounds pretty much something worth checking out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it looks like they're showing three features. Blood-sucking Bastards is described as the office space meets Shaun of the Dead, but with vampires. Dude Bro Party Massacre 3, a satirical twist on the 80s slasher genre, and Kittens in a Cage, which is a women's prison spoof. I love women's prison films.
Oh, they're fun. Yeah.
Anyways, that's this weekend, the 25th and 26th at Webster University. Go to shamfilmfestival.com for all the details. Jim and I saw just a fantastic documentary.
It's called
Electric Boogaloo, The Wild and Untold Story of Canon Films. They did a one-night screening only at the Tivoli the other night. Boy, what a fun time that was.
Yeah, if you get a chance to see it in a theater, I highly recommend it. If a theater near you does another one of those one-night screenings, it's worth checking out. It's so much fun.
But the DVD comes out a week from tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So I think that was just the one I think. I think all the Landmark theaters did that last Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's certainly one to think about renting or streaming.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about that documentary was Canon Films was this studio, and then the Menachem Golan and what was his brother?
Yoram Globus.
Yeah, they were these Israeli cousins who bought it in the real early 80s and just made exploitation movie one after another, cashing in on various crazes. And it's just great. You know, Bronson and Chuck Norris and Michael Dudikoff and Van Damme were the big action stars. Lucinda Dickey.
Yeah. She's in the doc quite a bit.
Yeah, it was sort of their homegrown female action star and dancer. We talked about it at length last week, but it was really entertaining. But the funny thing is, it goes into when these two Israeli cousins broke up and they started making competing films. And they talked about the Lambada. Lambada Set the Night on Fire and Lambada the Forbidden Dance, which opened the same day.
We have to rush out there, you know.
But these cousins refused to be interviewed for this documentary, Electric Boogaloo, because they decided they were going to make their own documentary, which was called The Go-Go Boys, and beat Electric Boogaloo into theaters. Ironically, you know, that was the last line of the movie and got a huge laugh.
Yeah. I don't know if you can... I checked, and I didn't find Go-Go Boys streaming anywhere on demand or anything, but I would like to see that too. Yeah.
But it's not going to be as critical of the Go-Go Boys as
more of a celebration, I guess. Yeah,
Since it's made by them, it's probably going to portray them in a better light.
I was
going
to say that some of the stars interviewed in this documentary don't have pleasant memories.
They don't, but I think. On balance, I think Go-Go Boys came off as sort of endearing.
Oh yeah, they're just so goofy. Some of their stuff there, they show clips for this movie going bananas that I'd never seen before, which is just insane.
It's Dom DeLuise and Jimmy Walker.
Exactly how dangerous is this place?
On the wildest safari ever to hit the jungle.
This is not Disneyland we go to.
And they talk about how they tried to get Clyde the Ape from the Clint Eastwood films to star in this thing, and they brought Clyde into the office, and Anakin was having this conversation with this orangutan about starring in his new movie, and then they said hell with it, and they brought in a midget and put him in the cheapest looking ape suit you could find.
I think they said Clyde bit the little young actor that he was supposed to be in love with in the film. But it's so ridiculous. And they talked to Bo Derek, talked to Dolph Lundgren. I was surprised at the stars that the show up for this.
Everybody,
a lot of tech guys on. It's great.
Yeah, it is terrific. And some behind-the-scenes footage I'd never seen, like from Death Wish 3, they had a scene with Bronson and his stuntman. I'd never seen that footage before.
Yeah, and then for you comic book fans, a lot of information about the Masters of the Universe film and the much-maligned Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Yes, and you fans of naked women, there was lots of scenes of Bo Derek naked
in from Bolero.
Which I'm going to have to see
it's
again.
It's from director Mark Hartley.
Oh, yeah, and he did this
Machete Maidens Unleashed, Patrick.
Yeah, Machete Maidens Unleashed is about the film shot in the Philippines in the 70s, and then the one he did before was called Not Quite Hollywood, about exploitation movies from Australia.
Oh, I saw that one. That's a wonderful film.
It is. They're both good, but I think this newest Electric Boogaloo is even better than those films, and I love those films. Yeah. So we recommend checking out that movie on DVD. But like we said, it was a landmark one night only. All the landmark theaters across the country played it. And this Thursday, also at all the landmark theaters at 7 o'clock, so that would be the Tivoli in St. Louis, they are showing Robert Altman's Nashville, which is a pretty amazing choice for a film.
Robert Altman's Nashville is 5 days in the lives of 24 unforgettable people. That's a lot of characters, so listen closely. Lily Tomlin is a gospel singer who strays just a bit when she has a one-night stand with Keith Carradine, a hot young rock singer. Ronnie Blakely is the adored singing star on the verge of a breakdown. Alan Garfield is the husband trying to save her life and her career. Scott Glenn is the quiet soldier who worships her from afar. Karen Black is the rival singer who dresses like a sweet little prom queen. But don't let that fool you.
Michael Murphy is the campaign manager who'll promise anything, especially to Gwen Wells, a waitress who dreams of being in the spotlight and may have to do a lot of things she never dreamed of to get there. Robert Doakey is the one man who tries to tell her the truth.
Shelley Duvall is the wide-eyed groupie doing what all...
I think Nashville is one of the most acclaimed movies of the 70s, period. But I'm wondering if it's a movie that younger movie buffs aren't that familiar with. I can't remember the last time Nashville played at a theater. It's not something they brought back in repertory like some other films.
Yeah.
Well, it was 1975.
75,
so it's
40 years? Possibly, yeah.
Because it's a 40-year...
Although there's sort of a cult developing around 70s cinema right now.
Yeah.
Being the last real golden age of risk-taking filmmaking,
And Robert Altman was definitely one of the leaders.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the best directors from the 70s. I mean...
Yeah, he and Hal Ashby, and they were the leaders back then.
Yeah.
You know, the outsiders, bucking against the studio system.
Robert Altman was from Kansas City.
Kansas
City, Missouri. He made industrial films there for a long time, and his first film was called The Delinquents, and it was about juvenile delinquents, and it was filmed in Kansas City, and it starred Tom Billy Jack Laughlin.
In
an early role for him, a good 13 or 14 years before he played Billy Jack.
Never seen that.
I've seen it. It's good. It was very low budget. I think it cost like a couple $100,000 to make. It's black and white.
See, he's the biggest name in that pretty much?
The only name in that.
Uh-huh.
And then he made industrial films for a long time in Kansas City. And then he worked in TV for a long time.
Yeah. I was telling you the other night, Tom, that I saw an episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents that he directed.
He did two episodes of Hitchcock Presents.
Yeah, it was the one I saw was with Vince Edwards and Carol Lindley. It was a nice little mini flick. Mini little thriller.
I think he did some Gunsmoke episodes. And I believe the first season of Combat, he directed almost every episode. And there's some real innovative direction going on. There's one episode that's sort of famous where Vic Morrow gets shell-shocked and he's walking around. It's told from his point of view.
It's slightly out of focus.
Yeah, and... I think even literal point of view, and I think that's considered very innovative for that time. That was probably 1960.
Yeah, that was probably the first season of that's in black and white, so I'm guessing that was probably one of those.
Yeah, it was. So, yeah, Robert Altman, and then he went to Hollywood and he made a Countdown, which was a space race film.
Jimmy Kahn?
Yeah, right.
I really liked it. Every once in a while, about once or twice a year, TCM will.
Yeah.
If you like the space race, you like the Apollo missions, that's definitely one to catch.
And then That Cold Day in the Park, which starred Sandy Dennis, that was a thriller, and it didn't get a whole lot of attention at the time. But then in 1970, he made MASH.
This is the story of two indispensable military surgeons. They had the army over a barrel. But did they take advantage of it? Yes, MASH, a motion picture that raises some important moral questions. And then it drops them.
And that really, boy, did that put him on the map. That was a huge hit.
Do you know how many other directors turned that down? It's like 14 to 15. It kind of varies depending what site you look at.
Probably some big-name guys.
The time, definitely.
Well, Elliot Gould and Donald Sutherland starred in that, and they hated Altman. They wanted him fired from that film. They did not like the way he was directing the film, and Altman had this innovative style with sound. He would have various characters sort of talking over each other, and that sort of became his trademark, and that started with MASH.
And that was the first of his five Academy Awards
for Best Director,
nominations. He never won. He received an honorary one before he died, but that was the first of five.
I remember that was paired with Patton for a while on a sort of double feature re-release.
I saw it.
Very different films,
I saw it at the Tivoli once, double feature with Catch 22, which was an interesting double feature as
well. Yeah, a little more closer in tone, probably.
Yeah, Sally Kellerman is Hot Lips. Mm. I mean, of course, she had the famous TV show, and the only actor that was in the movie and the show was?
Gary Birnbaum.
That's right, as Radar O'Reilly.
Yes.
But Frank Burns was...
Larry Linville, yes. Yeah, played Frank Burns. And of course, in the film, Frank Burns is Robert Duvall. Terrific actors in that.
Tom Skerritt.
Rene Arbenois.
Yeah.
Tom Skerritt prior to Alien.
That's right.
Fred the Hammer Williamson is in
there. Yeah, Bud Cort is in there.
Terrific cast.
So MASH really put Altman on the map. And then the 70s, I mean, just a string of one wonderful movie after another. Brewster McCloud was his follow-up, which starred Bud Cort as a boy who thinks he can fly, and he builds this pair of wings and flies through a stadium.
If you think Robert Altman made a mess of the army in MASH, wait till you see what he does to the cops in Brewster McCloud.
What do you think we are down here, stupid?
We take you now to the Houston airport, where super cop Frank Shaft has just arrived to work on the recent rash of mysterious strangulation murders.
What's this stuff in his eye?
That's, it's bird.
I don't believe we could determine what kind of bird it came from.
Now, there's a killer loose in this city, Johnson. We're going to get him, or we're going to go downtown and play politics.
Shelley Duvall was a regular for Robert Altman. You know, I think people think of Shelley Duvall in The Shining, but really, she made several amazing movies with Robert Altman.
Yeah, TCM every once in a while will run Brewster McCloud at like 2 or 3 in the morning. Yeah. It's worth checking out. It's a very, very odd film.
Yeah, Shelley Duvall's kind of a tricky actress, I think, to cast. She's so gangly and just sort of had an odd look about her, but Altman used her beautifully, especially in a movie version of Popeye in 1980. You know, people talk about Robin Williams being so perfectly cast as Popeye, and that's true, but boy, oh boy, she was born to play olive oil.
Shelley Duvall leaped right off the cartoon screen, off the comic strip page for that.
And McCabe and Mrs. Miller, another great Altman movie from 71. She was in that as well. That starred Warren Beatty and Julie Christie. I just watched that really recently. It's a Western, but it's not really a Western. It's about a whorehouse being built in this mining community.
There's a little cult around that film, isn't there?
Beautiful movie. Keith Carradine. Images. First time I ever went to the Tivoli, I saw Images. First time in my life, they were showing Taxi Driver at the Tivoli, and it was double featured with this odd movie called Images, which was this sort of psychosexual drama with Susanna York. I haven't seen it since. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. A lot of Altman movies are hard to find. I saw them at the theaters. A Wedding is a good example.
Yeah.
And it was one of his ensemble cast films where Tisa Farrow and Desi Arnaz Jr. were getting married, and I think Paul Dooley was the father of the bride, and Carol Burnett, I think.
Carol Burnett and Paul Dooley request the honor of your presence at the marriage of their daughter, Muffin.
I will.
To Desi Arnaz Jr., son of Vittorio Gassman and Nina Van Pallant.
Yeah, yeah. I was living up in Chicago, and there were lots of stories about how they were taking over one of the suburbs. And I think that actually might have the first screen appearance of John Malkovich. I think I read he had played a sales clerk in one scene or something.
Apparently, there was a lot of marijuana smoking on the set of Robert Altman films.
Surprise!
Even in a wedding, there's a scene where everybody just sits. After the wedding, everybody sits down and starts smoking joints. And I bet you they were really smoking, but I don't know. The Long Goodbye, another great movie from 73, and Altman.
Yeah, you mentioned that Elliot Gould had a problem with him on MASH, but he came back for that one.
I think MASH was so well-received that I think by then, by 73, everybody probably wanted to work with Altman.
Yeah, all was forgiven when a film is a smash hit that, I guess.
Yeah, Long Goodbye is Philip Marlowe, but a very unusual look at Philip Marlowe.
Yeah, I don't know if that was his first use of Henry Gibson in that. That was interesting. Mm. Everyone thought he was kind of washed up and laughing finish, but he was Altman grabbed him up into his sort of repertory company. Yeah. You know,
and Arnold Schwarzenegger has a small part in The Long Goodbye. Thieves Like Us, another great Depression era set crime drama with Keith Carradine and Shelley Duvall.
I just
bought that on Blu-ray recently. That's on the Kino Lorber label. That was a hard one to find for a long time too.
And we were talking just a little bit about California Split when I was talking about Mississippi Grind. That's with Gould and George Segal. Interesting film too.
I don't think that one's available either.
Yeah, I recall seeing it in a theater. I don't think I've seen it pop up on cable or anything like that since.
That was his next film. And then Nashville, which is, like I say, it's showing this Thursday night. Boy, that's a terrific movie.
That's a big, sprawling epic.
I think, you know, that's got to be considered Altman's masterpiece. I think it's sort of like to Altman what Annie Hall is to Woody Allen. It's just sort of generally considered his masterpiece. You know, Altman fans may choose a different film as their favorite, but Nashville is just the quintessential Robert Altman film with the sprawling cast, I think 30 or 40 speaking parts.
Yeah, at least 8 or 9 different stories going on at the same time.
He received an Oscar nomination, Best Director.
Well,
Keith
won an Oscar for his song in it, Easy.
Yeah, that's right.
He's terrific.
Ronnie Blakely, Christina Raines, Henry Gibson, you mentioned.
Lily Tomlin's great.
Scott Glenn, Keenan Wynn. Barbara Harris.
Ronnie Blakely, did you mention her?
She plays she's sort of the central character.
Karen
the
Black,
movie is sort and she's and that, her character is based on Loretta Lynn.
Right.
But don't miss Nashville. I mean, what an opportunity. But then Robert Altman followed that up with Buffalo Bill and the Indians. You ever seen that one?
I saw that in the theater when it opened. Yeah, that's an odd film, I tell you. That's the tough set there.
Yeah. And you had Harvey Keitel as a cowboy with his Bronx accent. he did something similar in Last Temptation of Christ, and he played one of the apostles in that, and he talked with his Bronx accent. Harvey Keitel's a great actor, but he doesn't do that sort of period well. Although something like Bugsy, he does okay.
I know Will Sampson is in it. Chief Dan George in it as a Sitting Bull? I have to check.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Three Women. Boy, that's a great movie.
Yeah, Shelley Duvall, Sissy Spacek. Yeah. That was released the same May 25th, 1977.
The same day as Star Wars.
Exactly.
Day. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's
I think Ebert had that as his number one film of 77. Mm-hmm. That's on Netflix. I've watched it just within the past couple of months.
It's a really good film. It did really well at like the Cannes Film Festival with BAFTA, with the Critics Awards. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A Wedding, we talked about that. That's another one that you just can't find anywhere. And I would love to see A Wedding again. I saw that at the theater. Quintet is an Altman film I haven't seen on this list. I think it's a sci-fi parable Paul Newman set in the snowy something.
Yeah. This futuristic snowy, you know, banked area there. Mm-hmm. That's an odd one to catch there. A Perfect Couple, I think that's the one with Paul Dooley, right?
Yeah. I don't think I saw that one either. I think Shelley Duvall may have been that one as well.
Yeah, Health is this film with James Garner and Lauren Bacall.
And Carol Burnett. And Dick Cavett. I saw that at the Tivoli, and that's one I don't think ever came out on VHS. I know A Wedding came out on VHS, but that one I've never seen run anywhere. And it's a spoof of the health food craze that was sort of popular in the mid-70s and takes place at this health food convention at a hotel in Florida. I don't remember it all that well. I know it was very Altman-esque, but...
And then we come to Popeye.
What am I? I'm Popeye, the sailor. And I am what I am, what I am, and I am what I am, and that's all that I am, because I am what I am. You got it?
I think so, yeah.
And I've got a lot of muscle, and I only got one eye, and I've never hurt nobody, so I'll never tell a lie. Top to my bottom, from the bottoms to my top. That's the way it is, till the day that I drop. What am I? What am I? I am what I am!
I'm a member of the Popeye fan club out of Chester, and I think the fans are still kind of split down the middle of that. But I think one of the audiences were kind of taken aback because they thought it would be feature version of the animated cartoons. It would, and yeah, I think it would be kind of tiring just to see, you know, Bluto and Popeye walloping each other and, you know, running after Olive. But instead,
it's a musical,
and instead it's based more on the comic strip by Elsie Seeger, Thimble Theater. That's a film that needs to be reassessed because it's just a gorgeous looking film.
And the songs are good. Harry Nielsen, who did Everybody's Talking to Midnight Cowboy, did the songs.
I'm large.
He's tall, good looking, and he's large. He's large.
Yeah. Great. I've heard that in a couple of different films.
Punch Drunk Love uses that song effectively.
Yeah, gorgeous Malta set of Sweet Haven. It's just amazing.
It is. It's a beautiful film. But it's considered a bomb, although it made a substantial amount of money. I believe it made $60 million in 1980 on a $20 million budget. It hurt Altman's career, and after that he did a whole lot of stage adaptation. Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Jean, Jimmy Dean.
That's
Cher,
a great cast. Sandy
Karen,
Dennis.
Yeah, Karen Black.
Yeah. Kathy Bates. Yeah.
That's a weird movie.
Yeah, it is.
But it looks like a photograph stage play, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I think that just came out on Blu-ray recently. Streamers, I remember seeing that at the theater. That was set in the Vietnam War, but it was set in the barrack. Secret Honor was about Richard Nixon. Who played Nixon? Was it
Philip Baker Hall?
Yes, that's right. Philip Baker Hall. Fool for Love with Sam Shepard. And
a Canon film.
Yeah, that was made for Canon Studios. You know, Canon came up with money. Directors like Altman were more than happy to work for him.
And it was nominated for a Palme d'Or that year at Cannes.
O.C. and Stig. You ever seen that?
That's based on a Lampoon story, isn't it? National Lampoon story?
It was an issue of National Lampoon that came out around 82, and the entire issue was the monstrous mind-roasting summer of O.C. and Stiggs, and it's the funniest issue of National Lampoon you can imagine. It's about these two teenage sociopaths who spend all their time basically torturing their neighbor, and they get their advice from Wino Bob, who's this black guy that lives in the oleander bushes next to the 7-Eleven. So I was really excited when it was announced that Robert Altman was going to make the film of that, and I saw it over at the Shady Oak. And it's kind of an interesting failure, as most of Altman's failures are. I don't remember who the two actors are who played O.C.
Is John Cryer in it?
John Cryer plays the neighbor that they're...
Yeah,
And Melvin Van Peebles plays Wino Bob, and Martin Mull was in that. It's probably a movie I need to revisit again, but there's all this reggae concert footage in the film for some reason. We're going to have to wrap this up. We could talk about Altman for an hour, but he is one of our favorite directors. There's Vincent and Theo.
The Player is a must-see. The Player and Shortcuts.
Now, those were kind of his... Those are kind of back-to-back. Those were kind of his comeback films.
Yeah. The Ready to Wear in 1994. Yeah, Gosford Park in 2001.
Yeah, that got him another Oscar nomination for Best Director.
Do you think he's a murderer?
Well, he wasn't exactly Father Christmas.
A masterpiece. A richly entertaining murder mystery.
Perhaps the bullet did it.
That was all over, the awards, the Critics Awards. Yeah.
Yeah, Maggie Smith, I believe, was nominated for an Oscar, as was Helen Mirren, right? Weren't they both nominated for that film?
But the Player is like him flipping the bird to Hollywood. Oh, yeah. It's wonderful. Yeah.
The Player's amazing. Tim Robbins.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's in that. Bruce Willis and Julia Roberts show up in that film. Yeah, it is. And then he ended his career with A Prairie Home Companion, which was a nice film. It had Meryl Streep and Lily Tomlin, and Lindsay Lohan, believe it or not, was co-starred in Robert Altman's last film. So Robert Altman, a great director. He died about 10 years ago. But don't miss Nashville. The opportunity to see Nashville on the big screen isn't going to happen very often. So that's this Thursday at the Tivoli in St. Louis, and I believe all the Landmark theaters across the country. We're going to have to wrap it up, though. Doggone it. Seems like we just started, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So we'll be back next week with reviews of Hotel Transylvania 2, The Intern, Green Inferno, Stonewall, Coming Home, Sleeping with Other People. It's going to be another busy week for the geeks at WeAreMovieGeeks.com.
The floodgates are open.
It is. Right. But
it's award season, so gear up.
Got to sign off for now. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
Listen to us again next week.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather.
Oh, naughty state. Hello, darling. Hey, 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 hey.
Black leather,
come
black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Smash.
chill. I got that feeling, Blake.